It's Wednesday, November 11th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 169 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 3 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
And my name is Pat.
And we've been missing Chris on the show. He's still off preparing for his personal trainer test. The good news is, from talking to him, if everything stays on schedule, he should be back in a couple more shows. But we've been missing him so much that I think we're going to cold call him here while recording this episode and talk to him about a couple things. So let's see if we can get him on the line.
It's like the phone a friend.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
Good, Dan. How are you?
Chris, it's good to talk to you. Good to have you here on the phone. Now, you might realize it's not typical for a phone to have four people on it, so you may, in fact, be on Skype right now.
Oh, am I on, like, right now?
Oh, yes.
At this very moment?
Yes,
we're live. We're live right now, Chris.
Wow.
You're on very much right now. In fact, working together, we came up with a top 10 list of the top 10 reasons we miss having Chris on Fear the Boot, and I wanted to read them directly to you. So, do you have a minute for us to go over these?
I most definitely do. By all means, please.
Okay,
go,
here we go. Number 10, we've had to start paying full price at Cracker Barrel.
That senior discount, you know, that hurts. You know, it takes away from the bill. I understand that.
Number 9, Fear the Boot has been holding in a fart for almost 2 months.
I'm really starting to get bloated, Chris.
You know, Pat and I are very, very similar. I'm learning ever since actually getting off of the show temporarily. But this is one where we may be just a little bit different. I'll see what I can do. But yeah, I feel bad for it because it's very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Very uncomfortable.
It's more comfortable for us if he holds it in, though.
Number 8. The chick that handles Iowa's sex offender registry is kind of hot.
I haven't seen her.
Really? State may want to know about that.
See, everything here is via mail correspondence. They don't want to have any personal contact with you.
Number 7, Pat has gone drunk with power without you here to keep him in check.
Mm-hmm. We can't shut him up.
A bastard. You give him an inch, you give him a free seat, and he just jumps in and spooches all over it.
Number 6, and this one is just personally from the heart from me to you. You're the only man on earth that loves out of print games more than I do.
Yay! Yeah, baby. I was just looking over my collection the other day and lamenting that I don't have anyone to play with.
Number 5, Wayne's custom fangs worry me a lot more than your sandwich board.
Now that I have it, I will bring the sandwich board that's not a sandwich board to Fear the Con 3.
I promise, Dan, I wouldn't bring the fangs.
Actually, for these last four, I'll pass around, because number 4, I think, came from Chad. Chad, do you want to read number 4?
No one else can bring the old lesbian's perspective.
Wayne, I'll let you read number 3.
The show just isn't the same without background noise.
It has lost a certain comfort factor when I don't have birds and crickets in the background comforting me throughout mm-hmm. the entire thing.
Well, you know, and the downside of that is that when I come back on, it's going to be too cold to have the window open up in my little podcast studio there. So I won't have any background noise at all, so I'll have to try and find some sort of replacement.
You're also going to need an oxygen tank.
That's true.
I could do that too, yeah.
All right, Pat, number 2.
Number 2. No Chris means no Julie.
Aww.
Oh, that's very true. Mm-hmm. And Pat, I know how important that is to you.
Yes, yes, you do.
And Chris, the number one reason we miss you on Fear the Boot is when Chad says something I disagree with, I'm tired of only being able to say, wait until your father gets home.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. How is the show going, by the way, right now?
Well, you tell us. You're on it.
Well, it's been going really great the last 5 minutes or so.
How's the personal trainer test going?
The studying is coming along very well, as a matter of fact. There is an online, you know, kind of practice test that you can take. And when I first immediately left the show and then took the test to see where I was, I had only gotten about a very scary 48% correct on the whole test, which is not very good, and it certainly is not of passing caliber. But just the other day, I retook it. You know, it's been about a good 3 weeks or 4 weeks or so. And I've only gone through the first 4 chapters of testing, but I am at now 82%, which is of passing capacity. So it's going well. It's going well. Feeling much more confident about it than I was a couple weeks ago.
just for the fans' sake, and then I'll let you get back to your studying, what's the date you're going to take the test on, and when can they expect you back on the show?
My target date for tests right now is November 19th. I may adjust that date depending on how I feel over the course of the next week or so. But there are numerous test dates pretty close after that. So my guess is right now that I will be conservative, as I am known to be at certain times, and we'll say that by early December, the first week of December is probably when I would be shooting to try and come back on the show.
And you're going to be on this show even after you're off, because you coached Pat on one of the topics we're going to be discussing. So you'll be with us in spirit.
We're talking about the Bard thing?
Yes. Chad's going to do a brief aside on a couple things that he's got sitting here, and then we are going to do the bickering about Bards. Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, Chris, I will let you get back to your studying, but I want to thank you for taking a few minutes to let us make fun of you. So
yeah, I'm going to get back to enjoying my last few weeks of actually contributing to the show before I clam up again whenever you rejoin us.
That's right. Yeah, get your talking in now, you bastard.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Chris DeKnight.
Yeah, Chris, remember, we may be missing you, but our aim is getting better.
Thank you so much for calling. It's very nice. It's kind of funny. I was just taking a short break and looking at the clock and thinking to myself, well, I would actually be recording right now.
And then
here I go.
Here you are.
So nice.
All righty, man. Well, best of luck with the test. And, of course, I'll keep talking to you. But as for the fans, and from the show standpoint, we look forward to having you back in, I guess, about a month. So,
yeah. About that.
All righty, man. You have a good one.
See you later.
Later, Chris.
Later days.
Bye.
Chad, now that we have Chris off the air and the show quality's gone back to its previous state of excellence, you have something here.
I have something in my hand that is a big steaming pile.
Something unexpected. What is it you have?
Put that back in your pants.
This is my copy. This is my very own copy of Riff's Ultimate Edition that is signed by the man himself, Kevin Symbieta. And he wrote Explore the Megaverse! ! Right above his name. And then I think it's signed by some guy named Wayne Smith. I could be wrong. Whoever this is, their handwriting is really, really bad. But he's one of the editors, too, and I don't know who that guy is. Probably a nice guy. But yes, I do have a signed copy of Riff's Ultimate Edition in my hands now, and I will cherish it forever.
I want to hear the story behind this, because unless he has a really, really good sense of humor, I don't expect Kevin Symbieta to be doing us any favors. So,
I'm almost tempted to take this to Gen Con next year, track down Kevin Symbieta, and get him to sign it again and see if I can get away with
it. I've heard he's affable. I've never met the man. I kind of have. I was with somebody. We were at a con. I think this was actually Gamma, which is the
trade show.
Yes, the trade show within the gaming industry, which somehow I got invited to. And I was with somebody else, and I think we walked by him, and he said hi and introduced me to him. I think.
Did he slap me on the ass and say good game?
No, he didn't. Actually,
did you slap him on the ass and say good game?
As best as I remember.
I hope
him.
Not, because it's not a very good game.
Unless I.
Oh, I've been setting that one up for 3 years. 3 years I've been sitting on that.
All right. Well, unless I have him mistaken with somebody else, he's kind of a short guy, because there's another guy I might get confused. Anyways, point being, all right, so where did you get this from?
So on our forums, which is a really wonderful online community that we have set up. I love our forum. Pat, quit playing with your belly button. Did you see that he was like sniffing his shirt?
Yeah.
I don't really quite get that. But anyway, so we have this great forum community that also somehow includes Pat sniffing his shirt. And there's a guy on there, and I'm 99% sure his handle is Atomic Scotsman, but his real name is Scott Wiegner. We also have a sticky thread on our forum that is called the RPG Swap thread, and it's where people can go and they can say, I have A, B, and C role-playing game books, comic books, or geek board games, or whatever. I am looking for 1, 2, 3, these other role-playing game books or stuff that I can't find or I can't afford, and I'm willing to do trades, and people make trades and deals on there. So Scott Wiegner, and I apologize.
We were probably brutalizing that last name.
It has three E's in it. I've never seen if it was Wiegner that has that many E's.
I used to speak German. I took like 4 or 5 years of German. And if it was a German last name, it'd be like Wegener, but he's saying it's not a German. We don't know. Yeah. So Scott, we apologize. We were probably brutalizing your last name. His name is Scott, and
So good guy.
We'll just call him Scott W.
Yes. And so anyway, he posts on there a thread. He's like, well, I have this game and I have this game. And then he's like, I have the best game ever made. It's the ultimate edition of Rifts. And he, you know, goes on and on about how wonderful and great this game is. So I quote him and I said, I will give you one package of the best mustard ever made, which is White Castle's mustard.
Honey mustard.
Yes, it glows yellow. I will give you three beer bottle caps, and I will give you one 200-year-old musket ball that you had given me.
Yes, I get,
out
I
of my supply. I will give you one 200-year-old musket ball.
It sounds like you're in Fallout 3 or something.
Yes, I know. I traded caps, I traded ammo, and I traded food for Rift's Ultimate Edition. Signed. Oh my god, I'm so excited.
Food that probably does have rads.
Yes. I mean, it glows yellow. It's
great. But it's worth it. If there's radiation in there, radiate all my food. That is the best honey mustard ever.
Yes, it is. It is great. So anyway, I said, I was joking around. I wasn't really serious. This is actually a pretty pricey book. I mean, it is signed by...
What's the... Even without the signing, I mean, well, okay, cover price is, what, 30?
No, let's not get into price. That's not...
Okay, well...
It's...
I don't know. Have you actually paid up yet?
Yes. No, oh, okay. I made that offer, put that offer on the table, and he's like, sold! And I'm like, really? okay. And he's like, PM me your address. And I kind of felt bad for PM. I'm like, you know, this is kind of a expensive book, and it's signed, and I'm giving you Fallout 3 prices for it. So... And he's like, yeah, man. And yeah, what's your address? I'm like, here's my
bottle caps, your radiated food. And the only thing interesting in there is the musket ball, because that really is. Yeah, that really is almost 200 years old. I mean, it's a Brown Bess musket ball. It's a real one. I mean, it goes way, way back.
Yeah.
And
pulled out of Napoleon's ass.
Yeah, exactly. And I sent Chad five of them. Mm-hmm.
Now I have four.
On a previous episode, we were talking about how my family has some antiques, and one of them is a lead press for musket balls or lead mold. And I
made a whole bunch of jokes about I want musket balls for Christmas.
And I'm not going to work with lead. So I just...
You know how many people... There were tons of people. And I'm not just talking like one or two. Tons and tons of people emailed me, contacted me in whatever MMO we were playing at the time, and sent me PMs on the forum saying, dude, when are you going to send Dan his lead? And when are you going to talk about them? When are you going to do it? And I was like, I really don't want Dan melting lead in his home.
I'm not smelting lead. It's just not
I know
happening.
You can do it safe. I know people do it as a hobby, and it's like...
Well, so to keep my end, I just looked around
online.
And
I never mentioned anything about it, and then all of a sudden in the mail, I'm like, what the hell is this? And it's this heavy envelope. And I'm like, musket balls? Musket balls! Yes!
I found a military antiques dealer online who was selling...
Yes.
Many military antiques, but among them was a cache of musket balls.
From Sri Lanka?
It was from some old colony.
Basically,
and it was buried. Yeah, it was buried in like a fortress, and they were a stockpile that was never used.
Yeah, 200 years ago, the British government didn't have a colony in this country, wherever the hell it was. And
so they wanted to
influence local politics. They had like a monarchy or something that they wanted to keep. So they sent them tons of guns and ammo to use against a resistance that basically never happened.
Something like that.
So anyway, I had these and he's like, oh yeah, man, give me your address. And so given, and he gave me his address, and I'm like really, really excited about it. And he PMs me, and we're actually talking back and forth. And I'm like, oh, hey, you know, you do this comic. He's a comic book artist. We kind of talk about comic books and different things like that. And actually, he's a big Mike Mignola fan, and I'm a really big Mike Mignola fan, and his art style, you know, draws heavily from that, and it's very good. He does a comic called Atomic Robo, and if you go to nuclearpower.com,
and you have done something that no one else has been able to accomplish.
I know, I'm so proud.
actually, it's the guys who do 8-Bit Theater,
right?
And run that site, and they do a couple of different comics, and we'll put the link in the show notes. But he has examples of his comics, like a couple of issues online. It's a print comic, though.
Yeah, and I looked at those a few times before, and the artwork is really an artwork I kind of like.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, it reminds me a little bit of the artwork in Invincible.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And I think Invincible, draws a bit from Mignola's style as well. I told him I really like your comic. I dig it a lot. And so he stuck 5 issues of Atomic Robo in there. He mentioned this, like, oh, I'm sending a little, couple extra things in there. I'm like, that's cool. So I put a couple of extra things in there as well in the one I was sending him. So I put in there, and he should be getting this by the time this episode drops. So Scott, if you're listening to this and you haven't gotten it yet, you know, fast forward a little bit. I won't be surprised. But I put in there a Fear the Con 2 t-shirt that I had extra. It was a large and didn't fit me. I put a cigar in there. I have no idea if this guy smokes, and probably he doesn't. But what the hell? I had a decent cigar. It was a Gurkha, in case anybody is curious. So I put a cigar in there. And I also put 2 Battletech books in there as well. I put, Rules Compendium?
Yeah.
I think it is. Yeah.
Blue-covered, hard-covered book.
Yeah, it has a Mad Cat on it.
Yeah, that's the Rules Compendium.
I put the Rules Compendium in there because I had 2 copies of the... I actually had 2 copies of the Rules Compendium.
And a special treat for him, your favorite page was marked with that naked picture of yourself. You'll know because it's the one that looks like he's wearing a sweatshirt.
No, that's the one that's stuck together.
Ah.
And then I also put a copy of Battletech Technical Readout 3025, I think.
I think Pat's getting nauseous from that last comment.
Yeah, I put Technical Readout 3025 in there. I have 4 copies of that. I was kind of a dick. I gave him the one with the pages that were coming out. The binding was broken on. So,
hey, Chad, looking at this book, you know,
the Rifts book, right?
Yeah, the Rifts book. It can't be all that bad. I mean, the first page is a warning about violence and the supernatural and warning parents about the contents of the book.
Do you know why it has this warning in here? Because, I mean, you know, D&D doesn't have this warning and such. And this is just conjecture on my part. Oh, God, was it? No, I have the wrong one. I have the wrong one. Because I was thinking...
Plane report or whatever. It's because of that.
Well,
it does go back to all that. It's been in there for, like, decades.
What I was thinking... Kevin Symbiote doesn't do cyberpunk. That's a different guy.
Yes, that's correct.
And actually, I had my stories mixed up, so I'm glad I thought of this beforehand. But so there in the 80s, there was a different guy who's totally not Kevin Symbiote who did a role-playing game called Cyberpunk. And it was about the future and about plugging your brain into the Matrix and computer hacking and stuff. Didn't have any real-world application to it whatsoever. It's just a game, total fiction. Well, the FBI got a tip-off that he was publishing an underground book about computer hacking. And the FBI raided this dude's offices, seized files, shut him down, and seized his computers.
Wow.
Because of his role-playing game.
Dude, what great PR.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it didn't really spread like that back in the 80s. I mean, if this were now, it'd spread all over the internet.
Yeah, that's true. That would be the ultimate viral marketing. Just get yourself out of it.
Totally. And it would be so in the consciousness.
He was so before his time.
Yeah, it was. God, I can't remember the guy who did it.
Yeah, back then, you're just harassing mountains of legal bills. Yeah.
You know what? And you know what's a shame? I've met this guy. I met the guy who did Cyberpunk. He runs this pirates game where they take Lego ships. You know, the big Lego pirate ships? The ones their size of... something big. And they do.
It's a good comparison.
Is it bigger than a bread box?
It's about the size of 2 bread boxes.
They were Gen Con.
Yeah, and they did at Gen Con. Yeah. And I think he's involved with that somehow.
That's
probably
cool.
Makes the rules for him. And he was running that. I remember he was wearing leather pants, but I don't remember his name.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with leather pants.
No. Hey, more power to you.
All right. Okay. This has already been kind of a strange episode.
So, Scott. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
for Rift's Ultimate Edition.
And check the show notes. We will link to his comic in the show notes if you're interested in checking that out.
This is one of the coolest things I've gotten all year. And I will love it and cherish it. And I only own one copy.
It's a hero's bloodstopper. You should see this book. I mean, it's a
Oh, my God.
It's a hero's blood. It's a hardback.
It's 375
book.
Pages.
Yeah, and it's thick pages. This is not like Bible paper
and
or something.
And I was reading the notes in back by Kevin Symbiote, the production notes. He says he wanted to make this 500 pages. He had to cut a whole bunch of stuff. Let's see. He wanted to make this 576 pages.
Wow.
But it's only 376.
Wow. That's amazing.
He had to cut stuff.
This show's going some kind of strange directions. So the thing Chris mentioned about the bickering about bards, we're going to save till the next episode. We are going to talk about it.
I'm going to interrupt you because I love interrupting you because it pisses people off. Scott drew his Atomic Robo character on the packaging that he sent me. It says riffs for the Munchkin and all of us, and that's really cool. Sorry,
that's fine. Munchkin's actually Steve Jackson.
This just made me really, really happy. I don't know why. This made me so very happy. And there's even a piece of paper in here. Looks like it was notes to some campaign. And it is at least 3 pages on the Javelin anti-armor missile system for the United States. And with pictures of soldiers with rocket
the
launchers.
Javelin, yeah. So we are still going to do the bickering about bards thing I mentioned when we were talking to Chris. But we're going to come back to it next episode just because I don't want to have this episode be too bizarre. So we're going to hit a more typical RPG type topic, and we will come back to that next show. The topic I want to talk about is one that has come up for Wayne, because right now, and I think I mentioned this last show, our gaming group is between games. Yep. We just ended one campaign. I am preparing to start a more full-length campaign, but between the two, we may have one or two one-shots. And we've been doing some board gaming like HeroQuest and such. But Wayne, the one shot that you are preparing to run is you actually want to do a dry fire of
Mutants and Masterminds.
Mutants and Masterminds. And I call it a dry fire because you want to test out a game that you are actually going to run at Fear the Con 3.
That's right. You know, I want to give you guys a chance to actually try to break my game. Since I don't know the system, I've never run the system before. I've never run a superhero game before. If it's going to break, I want it to break with you guys so I can kind of be more ready for it.
Right. But the thing that this has left you with is the difficulty of trying to run a game for the first time. And actually, I think this will even be your first time GMing at all. Well, no, because you're in the rotating GM. I'm sorry. So this will be your first game you've run, but this is going to be the first game system where we're familiar with the D20 system, which is what Mutants and Masterminds is based on.
Yeah.
But I don't think any of us, and I can't say for sure because two people of our gaming group aren't here, but at least among the four of us, I don't think any of us ever played Mutants and Masterminds.
I ask everyone because I was kind of curious if anyone did have any experience with it, and nobody in the group has played it before. I mean, it is a D20 game, but every D20 game has its own
quirks. And, and it's a fairly malleable system. So the position that we are in as a gaming group, and you more specifically, because you're often to carry the water as a GM, is bringing a brand new game into a group and running it for the first time completely blind with no idea what to expect from the system.
I went nuts with characters. I knew exactly what I wanted to do characters. I had the story flowing. It came to character creation time, and I'm looking through the character sheets trying to figure everything out, and basically I'm going into it, and I have my big question for everyone is, what do you do the first time you're running a system? How do you get ready for that? I mean,
let me start by asking you a question, because as I was thinking about this topic in true Dan form, I came up with a nice outlined list. But let me really start by asking, what are the types of things that have gone through your mind as you're preparing for this?
Okay. First thing I went through is like, I want interesting characters, interesting stories. I don't want to be in a situation where we're sitting around the table and someone says, I want to do something, and I'm left, hold on. Let me look through the book. Let me find, I think I remember what that page is. I don't want to be left in that situation, but I also don't want to memorize everything in the book. And, you know, I'm not going to rules lawyer anything. And I want to make it easy enough that everyone around the table understands what we're doing and understands the system as best that they can as well. So I have to not only figure out how the system works, I have to be able to explain enough for everyone else to play it, particularly combat. What I plan on doing is I want to run a couple of just quick combats with my wife just to try out the system. So I've experienced it beforehand, so I kind of know what it feels like and the flow of it.
I think one of the things that's going to help you here is, since it is a D20 system, you're going to have a lot of players that are familiar with that. You know, if you're the con, I mean, you're not going to have people, generally speaking, you're not going to have people coming in and saying, I've never seen anything like this before. I have no idea what are these dice things? So I think
papers,
that's going to help.
Words?
And I know for me...
Well, just, and actually, in some way, though, that make this more intimidating, because Mutants and Masterminds is not an obscure game. This is not a D&D or vampire sort of thing. It's not on that level. Mm-hmm. But this is not an obscure title. I guarantee you, many people at Fear the Con will have played this game before.
You know, and that's one of my fears, actually, is that I'll be sitting at the table and someone will sit there and is like, I want to do this. And I'll be like, you can do that?
Yeah, I kind of ran into that when I was running Descent, which is, of course, a board game, not a role-playing game. But I ran Descent at Fear the Con, too. And I said, even in the post-Fear the Con 2 episodes, one of my big regrets from that convention was I was not sufficiently prepared for my own games. I think we did a pretty good job, although some was too last minute, of preparing for the con. But my own games were not well prepared. And there was a guy at the table who really did me a favor, though put me in somewhat of an awkward spot, of schooling me on the rules as we were playing. What's possible and what isn't possible and how exactly some things work. But, you know, as I was running this through my head, because certainly anyone who's been in a group for any length of time and GM'd has been in the position of bringing a game for the first time to the table, trying to convince everyone to play it. That's probably a show in and of itself, but we're going to move past that. Presuming your group's agreed to play it. It struck me as the first round of problems you have to get past are purely emotional and social in nature. It's very intimidating because, number one, you're picking up a brand new game, and most RPGs are fairly complex entities, either complex in system, setting, or both. But you're taking on probably a lot of material, not necessarily, but probably, and you're also trying to introduce this material in a social setting where there's some amount of pressure to a group of people that have never touched it before.
Yep, and in this case, I've read this book through pretty much cover to cover now about three times since I've bought it, and I just keep going back to, I probably could have had this game ready to run about a week and a half ago, and it's just, I'm spending more and more time on it because I don't want it to fail, I guess is a good way to put it. If it fails because there's an inherent flaw in the way, in my story or in my game, I'm fine with that, because then we're discovering that. I don't want it to fail because I don't understand the system I'm trying to run. That's my fear.
Well, I think the biggest answer to that, too, is you just need to, like you said, you need to jump into it and start running some sessions. You need to start working with it, because that's, like they say, the old adage, you know, practice makes perfect. That's really, I think, what you need to do. And I think that's like with the group or with whoever, you know, like do some combat with your wife, but just start doing it and start practicing on it. I think that's going to go a long ways to just to getting you ready mentally for it.
When you're going into a new game, how do you typically prepare for it?
Start running track, and, you know, do some laps. Calisthenics, you got to stretch out. Got to stretch out.
Well, I think, you know, for me, going into like a new game system, what's always helped me is I've had a baseline. When I first started playing, I'd never played anything before. Obviously, it was all brand new.
Right.
And that's where you were when you first started playing. But now that you've had at least some experience, like from what I've always found is I can always go back and reference the previous systems and thinking about the new stuff. So I've at least got somewhere to jump off from. I think it's sort of like learning a new language. If you've learned a second language, it's easier to learn a third language. You've already been through that process of learning.
Well, and that's something you should also take comfort in, is the fact that what you're bringing in is a new setting and a new system. Bringing a good story and good characters and making it all work in this theater on the table is the same in everything out there. The techniques that work in BattleTech will work in D&D. And once again, the setting and the system change, but the basic ideas of telling a good story and being fair in handling the rules and handling problems on the fly, these are techniques that if you can do them in one game, 99% of that is going to carry over into every other game you run.
And that's totally true. The story I have could go in pretty much any system. Nothing system specific.
Yeah, I think the biggest variables that you're going to face are the small the quirks of the character classes that are going to be involved in there. And that's just something that it's hard to prepare for, because like you said, they're going to hit you with something like, well, I'm going to do this. And you're like, whoa, okay, that's possible. And yes, it is, because there's going to be rules lawyering. There's going to be people out there that know this stuff. And like, yes, you can do it with this combination and this. And those are the things you can't really prepare for. That's what experience brings.
Yeah.
You know, if you run the system for years, you get used to it, because like, yep, I've heard that, or I've seen that before, so I know it can happen. So I wouldn't worry too much about that, because it's just going
to
happen.
I agree. You know? You have to accept coming into some margin of failure.
Mm-hmm. You know, along those lines, I actually reached out on the forums just for anyone that's run it before. I was thinking if I could get a couple people that are familiar with the system. I shot a couple of ideas, got a couple of answers back from them, just kind of feeling out from people who have played the game. Here's my concept. Here's what I'm working with. I could use some suggestions on the system itself, and I think that was helpful too.
I was actually going to suggest going out and doing some research, like read some forums, go out there. There will be specific forums about Mutants and Masterminds, whatever. You can just dig into forums and sort of look for posts about this, that, and the other and read through it.
You can find
some very good stuff. I mean, just, you know, it's all personal, you know, a lot of it's just personal opinion, but you're going to find things like, oh, okay, yeah, there's that, and oh, I should listen for that. Or, oh, look at there. There's something that class can do that I didn't even think about.
I found some pre-generated characters, too, to kind of show me what people were doing character creation-wise, too.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about some concern with the rules, and I think you're doing a great thing by testing the combat system using your wife.
Right.
And if you aren't in a position where there's anyone you can test the game with, I mean, even if you just run the combats on your own, it should help. But that was one of the first things I came up with that has scared me in the past going into new games, is balancing combat encounters. You don't necessarily know what powers are available. Combinations of powers that if you use this plus this plus this, it creates something that is far greater than the sum of its parts. It's inevitable that you're going to come into combat encounters and they're going to be a lot more easier, a lot harder than you expected them to be, simply because you didn't see all this coming. And I think some of that can be fixed through testing. Some of it can be fixed through just accepting that margin of error. And I think the rest of it, you're just going to have to deal with on the fly. If something's too easy, just accept it was too easy and ramp it up the next time they encounter that type of person. If something's too hard, then an enemy needs to stop using a power or suddenly have less hit points or whatever to let that encounter in without the party being wiped out simply because you didn't know what you were throwing at them.
Yeah, and that's one thing. If you're in the middle of combat and things aren't going well for the party and it doesn't look like they're having fun, there's a lot of things you can do to deal with that. And like you were saying, I mean, just this power suddenly doesn't work anymore. Yeah. Oh my, I had less hit points than I thought I did.
With that in mind, and I guess it's like, what's your opinion on this, guys? I would think that it's better to come at that problem from the, you've made your fight maybe harder than it should be to back it down. I would think you'd want to be in that situation as opposed to, oh, this was really way too easy and now it's just over, because you can't like buff it up. I think it's harder to say buff it up if you realize this is
I think it's easier for the players to tell that you buff it.
Yeah, than it is to, oh, wow, this is really hard. So they have half the hit points than I really planned on them having. So, okay, there you go. Would you say
that or
does it? I mean,
I don't know.
Just,
I mean, you
whatever.
Could also, it's possible you could also give yourself something of a toolbox to work with it when you design an encounter, just so it doesn't look like such an obvious retcon or fix. You could have, you're running a superheroes game. Mm-hmm. So you could have there's a supervillain and he's got a bunch of henchmen. And one of his supervillain buddies is kind of standing in the background watching. And if the combat's too easy, well, he might come out and back his friend up. If the combat's just right or maybe even a little bit too hard,
he's running for it.
He's running for it, or maybe he thinks his buddy's got this under control. And so two rounds in, he just leaves. And the players can encounter him later. But you build in some flexibility that's already on the field, so you don't have to do a blatant cheat to get it back up to power. But at the same time, you're not running the risk of dropping the anvil on everybody in the first round without realizing what you've done. I think certainly people have to accept some things coming in. There's going to be some retcons. Just tell the people, human beings at your table, look, I've never run this before. I'm going to have to change some things on the fly. Don't be a dick about it.
Do you think that in a con game like that, you should maybe put in the description, like when people are going to sign up for it, however the mechanic works at whatever con you're at, that maybe you should put in, hey, this is my first game, or
you know, to be
I don't know how you'd
I'm
really
afraid
word
that would set the expectations too low. You wouldn't get people jumping in.
I gotta say, to be honest, I'm not saying don't do it, because there's probably the right person out there who's can do this or has done this. My personal advice to the vast majority of people out there, you should not be doing this at a con game. I think Wayne's making a smart move by running it with us first. Mm-hmm. So when he goes into the con, it's not his first time through. Because look, at a con game, you've got the added social pressure of...
Wayne. No pressure.
These may be good people, but the fact is, you've got one sitting of 2 to 4 hours, depending on the con.
And somebody has flown out from California or New York.
And they've given up another game they really wanted to play
to sit
in
on your
one.
Game. And while these may be good people, they're not your friends. These are not your close buddies who are going to...
They're my friends.
But I'm saying these are people you want to make that right impression on.
This is not your Sunday gaming
group. Yeah, this is not your weekly gaming group. And so there's that added pressure of you really have to make this pop. And I've got to be honest, I don't think I would recommend anybody do this. I mean, if you really want to and you feel really comfortable and you're a really experienced GM or just really ballsy...
Well, I think that if you're a really experienced GM and it's a not very hard... you're running Savage Worlds... You're an experienced GM. You got a good idea of what you want to do. Yeah, you're the veteran. You roll in. You're good. But like in your case, Wayne, you've run two games, not two campaigns,
right?
Two games, two sittings. You've had exposure to two, three, maybe four role playing game systems,
four or five
role playing game systems. And Mutants and Masterminds is one that you've never played, much less never ran. So, yeah, I think that if you got sort of all those modifiers going against your role for GM score, yeah, do some practice to knock off some of those modifiers.
I mean, I would run
Did you just use a dice rolling reference?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You like that?
I'm pulling you around.
Yeah.
You're getting to love the dice rolling. Nice. Make another check. Come on.
No. I failed my check.
Make a snuggle check. Ooh, come on.
I'll make a snuggle check with you.
That's right.
Yeah, I would run a new story at a con, but I would never imagine running a system for the first time at a con. I mean, that's why I wanted to try this out, because I've been wanting to do this. For me, I couldn't imagine doing that. That's just
well, can you imagine the person who would go into a con? Well, you know, this example I'm about to say has to have happened many times. You go into a con, you buy a book from the dealer that you've never played before.
Maybe even just got released.
Just got released. Brand new game, just got released. You flip through it, and then you're like, pick up. And then a whole bunch of people come over, and half of them take their shirts off, and then you have a pickup game.
I bet it happened with Pathfinder at Gen Con.
Pat's facial expression.
Well, Pathfinder, though, I guess at least had some...
So sorry the mic's not a camera.
Some background is being... I mean, it's a descendant of D&D 3.5, and so I think you could come into that. You may not know all the details, but you can probably
I don't know. I didn't flip through it, but that book's pretty thick. It's got to be a little bit more than straight up D20.
But there was something else you brought up, Wayne, that I think works better in your weekly gaming group than it will at a con.
Margaritas?
Oh, good God. Those work great. That's always a great ad. If you were ever at a con game and you can bring alcohol to the table, that lowers everyone's expectation and increases their fun.
Dan, you know what we're going to have at Fear the Con? Snow cones.
Are we really?
Yes. We're going. Cool. We have an industrial snow cone machine.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. My next door neighbor has one, too.
That is outstanding.
Yes, it is.
I had not heard that until now, but that is out freaking standing.
Uh-huh. I knew you'd like that.
You know what else we need?
What's that?
We're going to need margaritas, too.
Can't. If you have them, just don't tell me about them. But we'll talk about Fear of the Con later. We'll have a Fear of the Con 3 episode coming up at some point.
We have
point,
a whole thread about contraband at Fear of the Con.
Yeah. So. Don't get me in trouble.
You don't know anything. We're not going to have any alcohol at Fear of the Con. Only the stuff that they serve us.
There will be beer there. But yes. Whatever's
as far as you know.
Everything else is it. Water.
Above board.
So I'm taking the advice of before I run my game, run out and grab a bunch of Bud Lights and set them around the table for everyone.
Ew.
But lagging the game to look things up, that was something else you mentioned. You hit a point where you don't know what someone's trying to do or not familiar with the power, and you have to pause the game to look something up. I think you've made a good start on this by reading the book cover to cover multiple times.
Oh, lagging the game to look something up. I thought you were saying lagging the game to light something up. And I'm like,
No.
Huh?
If you got to go out and spark it up in the middle of the game, that's a completely different show.
Go out back
to
burn a wheel.
This is Wayne we're talking about. I don't think Wayne does that.
Oh, no. Yeah, sure.
Oh, no. I'd fear the con, too. I had to leave my Transformers game.
I saw him out back with the old guy burning a wheel. Yeah. It was awesome.
He had his wizard bong. He wasn't rolling D20s, but he was rolling tight. But lagging the game to look things up. And I think you're making a good first step by running this with us, because I hope within your weekly gaming group, and by you, I don't mean you, Wayne, but the listener, that they have enough patience that if you're bringing in a new game, you can say to these guys, look, understand I'm going to be a little bit slow at first. We're going to have to figure some of this stuff out. And that may mean every so often I'm going to have to pause the game to look something up. I think there does have to be a point of common sense, even with your friends, where if the game has stopped so long that the drama's broken, the immersion's broken, people are whipping out their phones or laptops or playing games or going out to spark it up on their wizard bong, then it is probably time to just say, you know what, let's just do it good enough. I'm not exactly sure how this power works. So for now,
do you think that
let's just try to be fair and hand wave this a little bit.
Do you think hand waving is more expected at a con game? Or more
acceptable?
Acceptable.
I would say yes. I mean,
it almost
because,
has to be. But
well, yeah, because what are you dealing with here? This is not a campaign.
Yeah.
This is not a group
this
that you're going to be
serious
playing with beyond for the next 3 hours.
Yeah.
After that, it's done. You're not going to have a second session where there's any, you know,
but Pat,
for future history.
I don't want to lose out on any XP that I'll never use again.
I hate to tell you this, Pat, but Fear the Con 3, I'm going to be playing in the second session of a game.
Oh, really?
I played in. Oh,
that's cool.
Oh, my God, he did the zombie Jenga game I've constantly talking about all the time. He's running part two with the same players, same characters.
Okay, well, this is sort of the exception to the rule then. But yeah, I think, you know, in general,
I posted on our forums, I was like, well, how are you going to do that? My character basically died. I mean, because my whole character went back to his town, which was zombie infested, to find his little girl who he knew was dead anyway. And it was kind of like a walk off into the sunset, he'll never be seen again suicide sort of thing. And then he explained why my character's back, and my jaw hit the floor. And cool. I cannot wait.
Awesome. That sounds really fun.
But even if you're in your Sunday game, I think some amount of hand waving still can be accepted. Totally. Because I would think that most people, assuming they feel they're getting a fair shake, would rather have the hand waving at the moment and somebody just makes a note that says, okay, we need, how does Ice Storm work? I don't know. We need to look this up later. We can't find the rule. So we're just going to put this aside. Do something that sounds sensible and fair that isn't screwing the player and isn't screwing your game and move on. And I think most people will accept that and then go back and look it up later. There is no reason to expect you'll have it perfect the first time, much less try and make yourself have perfect.
You know what else I plan on doing, Dan? I'm getting a cheat sheet together as well. Some of the things I don't think will ever come into play, but I'll have a sheet ready to grab them just in case because it might.
That is something that not enough games have done, in my mind, is created cheat sheets of commonly needed rules or stats. Certainly, D&D has a ton of them.
You know,
BattleTech had some really good ones, but I don't think enough games have put out.
At Fear the Con, too, I've seen game masters have cheat sheets. You know how they used to print them on the backs of GM screens?
Yeah.
I've seen people print out just cheat sheets for their GMing purposes on that. Just commonly used charts or rolls or rule snippets or whatever. And I've seen people pass out cheat sheets to their players.
Oh, I entirely plan on doing that too. Because I know that I've read through the book. I've read through the description of each power so many times.
Like Dave gave us cheat sheets for Cortex for this last game that we were running.
And but, he keeps throwing them at us, and I'd be like,
you know, I actually read all that stuff.
I did too. Yeah. I did too. But I'm like,
I thought they were really good. It was and good. He thinks that no one ever read any of those.
If only you got so upset about it, Pat.
Huh?
If only you would read your character sheet.
Yeah.
You know, your powers. I just
go on the fly anyway.
I do have to admit that I knew more about your character than you did because I read your cheat sheet before you did.
That's fine. Yeah, you know, my character didn't do dick anyway, so whatever.
Along the lines of cheat sheets, it might be better. I actually wish I had a PDF version of it so I could have it up on the laptop and do a quick search.
Are you going to bring your laptop to the game? Are you going to be a laptop GM?
I tend to be a laptop one because even in the last games I ran, I'll have OneNote going, or I'll have Excel because
Excel. You're Excel wizard, man.
I have different tabs going, and OneNote it actually reminds me of Excel with the way it does tabs. Mm-hmm. And I have all this information readily available. But the most important thing is I can control F it. Mm-hmm. You know, I can just search and find whatever I'm looking for. It's just so easy to do, and I don't have to have all those notes in front of me.
Well, you know, and for quick GMing, especially for these games that do not have an index. And the couple game reviews I've done on the blog, I think that's one item I've put in all of them, is I immediately flip to the back and see if the book has an index or not for stuff like
this. It's a reference book.
Yes, yeah, it is.
I mean,
it blows my mind.
Most of the word processing and publishing programs do it for you anyway.
Yeah.
But that aside,
you know, my only hesitation for bringing the laptop is it's great for the weekly games, and I plan on bringing it in to run that, but I'm not sure if I'm going to bring it at the con because if I'm running one game and I'm going to play in two, I don't want to drag it around all day.
What I was going to say was
376 pages.
No index.
But if you
fail, Mr. Symbieta.
If you have a laptop and you have a PDF version of the rules, that's searchable. This was not a pirated scan, but this is an intended for sale text version of the rules. That searchability may offer you significant aid in running the rules for the first time.
Do you think that somebody would... This is a whole different discussion, but do you think that somebody might pirate role-playing game book, not because they can't afford it, they might not even own it, but they want a copy on their computer that's indexable and searchable?
Yeah, I kind of wish I would have bought the PDF version instead of the full one. I love having the book, though, to be honest, because I'm not going to take the laptop into the bathroom with me to be reading through it.
Well,
don't touch his rule books.
Yeah. In light of not having a PDF file, since you do have the book, and I would definitely get something like as simple as some post-it notes or something like that, and mark the important sections, like powers. Yeah. So that way, whenever you want to look something up, you don't have to go, oh, what page is that on? Or look through an index. You just go up, feats, powers, boom, you're at least to the power section.
I really like that idea, because every time I'm going to do a character creation, I'm flipping through the book trying to find each individual section.
I mean, it'll save you some time, and so, because that's something that I've done in the past, even as a player, just marking my own handbooks so I can get to it quickly is a good idea.
Here's one that I've seen come up a few times. As you're going through the game, you can hand wave or BS a few things, but the one time the game can potentially be catastrophically painted into a corner is if a player has a serious problem with their character. They made a character thinking something sounded cool because nobody knew the system, didn't realize that this is a worthless character, or maybe it's perhaps on the flip side, so broken powerful, the GM has to limit it. But there's something about their character's not working, yet you've got a group template, you've got a flow, you've got a story. Once again, we're not necessarily talking about, I don't want to emphasize con games. We're talking about running a new game, not, you know, to be honest, it's a con game.
In a con game, it could be worse, because I'm handing you a character that's overpowered, or I'm handing you something that's a lump of coal.
In that case, you would know what you're handing out, but if you made it yourself.
I could be handing out something that's the incredibly overpowered character, but the person I'm handing to has no idea what I had in mind for it, and they just don't know what to do. That's actually something I'm worried about. A couple of the characters, they won't necessarily have these big, vast powers. There's intricacies to them that I think you guys will jump in on. But if you don't, you could be sitting there without... that's something I was kind of worried about.
I would advise not assuming that people will get the intricacies. I'm not knocking anybody, but I'm just saying it's best to not hope for that.
I don't know.
Because like I said, you've got those stories in there. Don't base a lot of things on that, because that is a big risk.
I mean,
that might not happen.
You ran two games at the first Fear the Con, if I'm not mistaken. There were Danverse games.
Yes.
And didn't you have one group really took like intricacies and that sort of thing and really ran with them, and then the other group kind of just followed the main plot and didn't run with any of the...
No, they both followed intricacies, but they picked up on different intricacies. One of them went a much more social route, whereas the other one went a much more technical and sneak route, as best as I recall. Mm-hmm. And they did have very different ways of approaching it. And I'll certainly say, you don't know what people are going to latch on to. And I did try to draw out to people, here's a 2 or 3 sentence description of what your guy is good at. You walk into this knowing what's going on. This was a lot simpler in Savage Worlds, which is a system I was using, because typically your character sheet is so slim to begin with. You have so few attributes, so few skills, and so few traits. You pick a Savage Worlds character up and you pretty instantly skim read what it is this guy does. And so I think most people clicked into that pretty quickly. But let's say, once again, this isn't a con, but you're several weeks in and suddenly somebody realizes this character, who's integral to the plot, who's built into the group template, they can't stand playing them. Maybe it's the entire archetype. It's not just a power, but the entire archetype is pissing them off. And what looks really interesting to them, now that sitting there during the game, they've been flipping through the rule book and understand things a little better, they actually want to play something so radically different.
I had that in our last campaign we played. And it had nothing to do with the rules necessarily, but it was character concept. In fact, my character was a central character to the story, and I got bored playing him. It was nobody else's fault except my own.
So you know what my advice that is? For the player standpoint, you hate your character, you want to play something else, do it.
Yeah.
Don't quibble. Don't think. Don't capitulate. Just frickin' do it. Because from what happened with you, we hemmed and hawed.
Yeah.
For weeks and weeks, and you were miserable with it, and you want to change it. Just do it.
Yeah.
You know what? I think the group template is great, but I've never dealt with it before I started playing with you guys. In my other experiences, it was, what do you want to play? You know, it's more along those lines. So it's not that you have to worry about, well, gosh, if I play something else and we're left without an integral part to this whatever, so I'm going to be screwing the group or whatever. So I don't worry about this so much, because like I said, it's all about having fun. So that's my advice. Just do it. Just change.
You can keep the same character and personality and just change what they do as well. I mean, that is big hand waving. It could pull immersion, but if you're running a new system, that can happen. I mean, you don't know how things work. You could very easily get a couple games and decide the character's fine. I just don't like what he's doing. And
that was the total opposite of the problem I had. I could have kept the character sheet and the powers and everything he could do. And I just wanted to rewrite the personality, the background, who he was.
That would be a lot harder to do.
Be something totally different. And the character was too important to different aspects of the plot because we were doing the rotating GM. I mean, I know, Wayne, you were saying it's like you are the one who like, don't change your character. I have all these plans involved.
Don't kill your character.
Well, there's always other options like you can NPC him and such. There's ways of moving him off without getting. In fact, actually, one of my examples, this was many years ago, but the first time I played Rifts, I played a character that I loved, was one of my probably one of my favorite characters this day. He was a guy that was a leader of a dog pack. But I didn't realize until I got into the game just how disposable everything in his arsenal was.
I could flip open to the dog pack page if it had an index, but I can't. So.
Right, let's move from rule stuff to setting issues. Now, Wayne, let me ask you a question. For example, I know that Necessary Evil has an explicit setting. I don't mean obscene. Sorry, Pat. I think every game has an implicit setting. I think if you look at the way the rules are structured and such, there's an implied setting. But some games... Well, we can debate this a later time. But the point
I would
being,
say every rulebook I've ever seen has a world that it defines within the rulebook. I said every game I've ever seen. So you keep your eye to yourself, Chad. I haven't seen a book. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Seen Savage Worlds, and the Savage Worlds book is definitely not that. It tries explicitly.
There is a simplified setting to some of the Savage World.
So. All right, I don't want to debate this. I have an opinion. I don't want to debate this because it's a different topic. Okay. But point being, some games come with an explicit setting. There is a clear setting. Battletech does not have three settings. Okay, it has one.
Right.
D&D has many.
It has two.
Tarkages does not.
Cthulhu Tech.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough, maybe. But point being. Does Mutants and Masterminds have a stated setting?
It has a world that has its own characters and things like that.
Okay.
Yes.
So it does have a stated setting. I knew Necessary Evil did, but like I said, I'm not as familiar with Mutants and Masterminds as I am Necessary Evil. So here's
a Savage Worlds game.
I do. Mm-hmm. So. There are some things I just said I was familiar with.
I can say for what I have planning, too, I'm throwing the stated setting out the window, too.
Okay. Well, here's the thing that I was going to say if you're choosing to use their setting. If you're bringing a new game to group and choosing to use a setting, I would always recommend, first off, keep this game small geographically and culturally. Start it in one area. Don't let people create characters from far and distant lands. So you know... inside and out, what's going on in this area? They're not pulling strange things out of their ass. They're not traveling 1,000 miles to places, and you're not just looking up rules. You're like, give me 20 minutes to read that city, because I have no idea what this place is even like. I don't know what's over the mountain. I have no idea what's beyond that. And I would recommend keep it small geographically and culturally, and then expand outward as you're ready to. Start them in one place, keep them there. Once you're ready to move on, let them move a little bit farther. And I realize some of that's box canyoning or railroading, but if you're new to it, this is just a part of growing. Because if people just say, you know what, I'm just going to take off and go to the other continent, and they've left you sitting there like, well, I've not even read that source book yet. This isn't fun for anybody. I mean, this is just...
Yeah.
Folks, well, I mean, you might as well have as much fun playing a video game that hasn't been released yet.
Even any role-playing game that you play, whether it's your weekly game or just a con game, you know, there is where the story is taking place, and the GM has some fudge room with that. There's a crossroad, the plot's to the city to the left. Everyone just, for whatever reason, decides to go to the city to the right. The GM can suddenly transfer the story over to the city on the right. You never know. But I think that when the story is right and everybody goes left metaphorically, totally away from where the story is purposefully, they're just kind of being dicks.
Well, and I think this is a problem you can also perhaps foresee a little bit, presuming this is not intentional asshattery, this is just an accidental choice, is let the people that you're going to play with flip through the rule book in advance and see what they latch on to. Because you can get an idea of what's going to interest them in terms of character concepts, in terms of setting, simply by saying, look, flip through the book, skim a few sections, look at the pictures. What do you think? What looked interesting? Granted, they may not have noticed something that's really cool, or they may overestimate how cool something they saw is. But I think you can at least get some kind of a read on how these people are going to play it. Because when something you're walking into blind here when you run this far group, this group of people has never played a superhero game together.
I've tried.
I mean, of course, you're handing us characters.
Yeah.
But if we decide to continue this or pick this up again, I can't even tell you what sort of superhero everyone would make. I really can't.
Yeah,
you
know? And I even look at the book. I don't even know what I would make for myself. There are so many options. I mean, I have no idea what anyone would make.
And if you use an established setting or even use your own, there may be something that you mentioned in passing. They're like, wait a minute. There's a space station? Let's go there.
Yeah.
And you never saw this coming. But if we ahead of time had kind of known some of this, you might have seen these reactions in advance.
That's why when I'm for this game, at least I'm doing a very simple, essentially, it is Earth. There are some superheroes. It's nothing too advanced, you know, nothing too different than now. It's not like you're looking into a much larger world that you know nothing about. It's really going to feel familiar, I hope. You know, the reason I'm not using the setting is because it is a new system to me. To be honest, going in, I was learning enough as it was. I was trying to remember enough as it was. I didn't want to try to remember someone else's setting as well.
I will agree. And this is kind of what I was saying with the setting, but I would apply this, I guess, to the game as a whole. Just like with setting, I said, you know, start small and work outward. I think with the game in general, take it in bites. I mean, don't go out and let money burn a hole in your pocket. And if there's 20 books for this thing, don't get 20 books. Get one, maybe two, and start there. Really, and I think you've made an excellent choice. If you're already intimidated by the system, then yeah, drop the setting. Use your own if that makes you feel more comfortable. If that's added paperwork or whatever, that may be a separate issue, and maybe you go back to the established setting. Or if there's something in the established setting you like. But the other thing is it does also protect you from someone knowing more than you do.
Yep.
I ran into an issue back when I was running Forgotten Realms because some of the people that I played with, man, they were up on it. They read all the novels. They had read all the source books. I mean, they knew it far better than I did. And so I just told these guys, I said, look, straight up, this is my Forgotten Realms. I'm changing it around. Yes, I'm using some of the same names and places. I am using a lot from the established setting.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm just taking one name and running, but
I think
some of the stuff, you know, it just ain't out there.
I think that
it just doesn't work like that.
That's sort of been an understood thing in almost all the groups I've been in is you can call me on the rules. Don't call me on the setting. I mean, if there's a big plot hole, I mean, that's one thing, but I don't know. There's something very, very frustrating as a GM, when you're running a setting and somebody is calling you on a city name or something like that, not saying that you got it wrong, but you've made changes or they know more about it. It's like, okay, you go from point A to point B and it's like, oh, well, we stop at this inn in this town and this inn, this, all this stuff is here. And it's just like, that's going to screw things up for me. So that stuff isn't here.
Yeah. We did an entire episode a while back. It was a long time ago on setting lawyering, which is just as bad as rules lawyering. It's a little bit less common, but it's just as bad.
You know, it might be hard as a player though. If you're coming in and you have a setting you love, and this is what someone's running, it would be hard not to do that. And if things seem off, it doesn't feel like the setting you think it is.
I did that with one of Dan's settings in BattleTech, the story he ran. I ran a game for my old group, and it was based on something that Dan was writing that I loved a whole lot, but I didn't remember 80% of it. I remembered sort of the vague push of where he was going with it and what he's doing. I didn't remember the names of the places or some of the exact details, so I filled in all that information on my own with it, and it was hilarious to see these guys describe it to Dan, and they loved it. They love the campaign, and they're describing it to Dan, and Dan is just sitting there with bald fist, teeth clenched, face turned red. He's like, he did what? And it's just like, I never thought I'd talk to you again, Dan. You gotta understand. Oh,
it was, because mind you, this is not just something I love. This was a setting I had created.
Yeah, totally.
Or a portion of a setting I did not create.
I totally ripped you off.
And so, yeah. And so these guys were like, you know, I had to run this game for them. They're like, oh, it's like this, like this. I'm like, no, it is not. It is nothing like that.
I just used it as inspiration.
I'm talking about sushi. What you were describing as Raisin Bran. These have nothing in common.
I love Raisin Bran.
But I do too.
Loved it.
It's not a quality. I realized it sounded like a quality deal. Yeah. It wasn't. It was, I meant describe Braille. Anyways, a couple closing thoughts on this. First off, let me reiterate again, read the book thoroughly. That's the first thing. I mean, you cannot know that book well enough, especially on your first time out of the gate, before character creation, before everything else. Secondly, test the game, make some sample characters, run some sample combats. you will not think of everything. You won't come up with the angles people will. But it's at least due diligence. It's kind of getting you over the bell curve. We live in the internet age. Look online. There are people you can ask for help. There are people out there that are probably already running this game. The only caveat I would give with that is...
Don't go to RPGNet.
Well, let me put this more vaguely or more broadly. Going out onto the internet is like, imagine if you could just reach your hand down into the ocean and grab something. And this something could be a tasty fish, or it could be a stingray or a jellyfish or an old rotten boot. And that's not a fearable boot, just an old rotten one that we discarded years ago. It's, you're going to run into all kinds of people with all kinds of opinions, and many of them will pass their opinion, and because gamers are typically fairly smart people, may convincingly pass their opinion as a fact that this class or this setting or whatever is the only way to go or the only way not to go. And so read all this stuff with a critical eye. Look for the trends in what people are saying. Do not let anyone freak you out, turn you on to something or turn you off to something just because of their anecdote and ravings. And it is all the better if you can find somebody you know and trust, or a group of
and
people.
And believe their anecdotes and ravings.
Well, but you know, you can typically, at least with them, read between the lines. Even if it's an anecdote, well, you can typically read.
You know what? I think that you should go out to the internet, look for all that stuff, but I think you should do it with a slightly different perspective. Knowing that the stacked noise ratio is going to be high, but you're not looking for factual information. You're looking for cool stuff and ideas. And if somebody throws something out that is a good idea, whether it's right or wrong, doesn't matter.
Well, Sarah, and you can fact check all our stuff. If somebody says the power is broken, open your rule book and read it and see if that power is indeed broken. But I can't tell you how many times, more so with video games and role-playing games as well, I've gone out on the internet and read something that just completely freaked me out. And then picked up the book or played the game. It's like, no, it's not even close to true. It's just what Penny Arcade called the jungle noises of the internet. It's but having said that, it's still a great resource because there are good people out there that can give you honest opinions and really offer you good insight. And so if you don't know anyone personally in your gaming group or your local gaming store or your extended network of friends that's messed with this before, it can be a great place to get some ideas to help ease you into the setting and system. So, Wayne, I'm going to be interested to see how this Mutants and Mastermind game go. And
no pressure.
We should be picking that here in the next week or two.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll have a post-game report. Maybe not. We'll see.
But that entirely depends how it goes.
Are we going to have an actual play?
No, we will not. For the rest of you guys, have a great week, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Goodbye.
Thanks, Scott.
This has been a production of Fear the Booth, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.